Thanks, John. Good morning, everyone. It's really good to be among you and sharing with you this morning. It was a few weeks ago, but I'm sure the images of the fire at Notre Dame in Paris are still fresh in our memories. The powerful images of this iconic building, or once iconic building, in the midst of destruction, caught maybe many of us as we watched them fill our TV screens. In the aftermath of the fire, I was struck by something I read about the tragedy or disaster. And it was a tweet that I read on social media, and it said something about the protocol that the fire department in Paris followed in the wake of the disaster. And it was a protocol that had been put in place that if a fire hit this building, what the fire department should do. And the fire officers were trained to first of all rescue the people, then save the art, then salvage whatever furniture they could, and then focus on the structure of the building. That was the order, that was how they were trained, and that was actually what they did, the process that they followed whenever the fire hit. And the tweet went on to say this, that it's because they knew what could be rebuilt and what couldn't. What could be rebuilt and what couldn't. Focus on the people, save the art, and then think about the structure. We're thinking about the structure this morning a little bit in Carnmoney. And we're thinking about the strategy we have and the structure we have. And the reason we're thinking about it after having a strategy and vision over the last 11 years is because at times structures can be changed and strategies can be replaced and things can be changed and different. But our calling, like the fire department in Paris, is actually to focus on people first and then think about the structure. And I wonder when it comes to church if we sometimes get it the other way around. Perhaps we spend so much time thinking about structures and programs and strategies and organizations and ministries and numbers and courses and events and sometimes forget the most obvious part, the people. The church is the people of God. Not the building of God, not the business of God, but the bride of Christ and the treasure of the King. And John has already indicated this morning that we're about to step into a new phase over the next few months of redefining our vision as a church and also developing a strategy that will help us to move towards that. And in doing so, we look forward with anticipation of what God is going to do in our midst. We're excited about the future. And we also do so while looking back in total thankfulness and amazement about where God has brought us to and what he has done among us in the past. But before we think about structures and strategies and surveys, we must not and we will not lose sight of the people and the purpose we have as a church. And so I'm going to share some details this morning of what I think this will look like, or certainly what this process will look like over this next season. But really the heart of what we're doing today is to invite you, yes, to inform you, but really it's to invite you all into this as a process. This is not a process that we want to happen separate from people, separate from the congregation. It's going to involve us all, and I'll try to share that and to emphasize that as we go. But to help us to do that, we want to consider some words that Jesus gave to his disciples just before a key change in circumstances in their lives. And so I'm going to read from John chapter 13, verses 31 to 38. The words are not going to appear on the screen, so if you want to turn your Bibles on or open them in front of you or just listen, that's totally fine as well. So John chapter 13, verses 31 to 38. When he was gone, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples, if you love one another." Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus replied, "Where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly, I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." Amen. Jesus was going to be leaving his disciples soon. And so knowing that, he began preparing them for his departure. To best prepare his followers, he began to share, or he shared some core truths that are found in five chapters of John's Gospel, of which John 13 is a part of them. And he shared these core truths to help them in the next steps of their journey when he would not be physically at their side. You see, these disciples had experienced some incredible moments with Jesus over the last few years, some amazing moments in the past, miracles and healings and events, and they enjoyed life with Jesus right at their side. They'd known his presence and his friendship. They'd experienced his invitation and his challenge. They had learned from his teaching, and they had followed his lead, and they had witnessed so much blessing and experienced much breakthrough. But while they'd experienced incredible moments in the past, Jesus was pointing them towards a new future, towards a different reality, and he clearly tells them that where he is going, they cannot come. It was going to be a new reality where he wouldn't be physically with them in bodily form, but one where he would challenge them to move outwards in incredible forms and new forms of witness. It wasn't to stop, Jesus was saying. And so Jesus prepared them for what was about to happen in his death, and he instructed them about how they were to live in his absence. These disciples were uncertain, and Jesus provided reassurance for them. They were reluctant to lead, and Jesus challenged them to do so. They needed direction, and Jesus pointed them in the way to go. And you know, I don't think we're any different than those disciples. At times, we too need direction. We are uncertain about the future, and Jesus wants to reassure us through his word. At times, we're reluctant to serve or lead, and Jesus wants to challenge us to do so. And at times, we too need direction, and Jesus wants to point the way for them. But for these disciples, it wasn't so much about them going to a different place, but Jesus wanted to help them to become a different people. Not about going to a different place, but Jesus wanted them to become a new people. And so what do we learn from ministry from these words of Jesus? What do we learn about ministry from these words of Jesus? Firstly, three things this morning. Ministry needs unity. Jesus said, "By this, everyone will know you are my disciples." What was he talking about? What was the "this" that he was referring to? Was it by our really impressive buildings? Was it by our brilliant music? Was it by our deeply theological sermons? Was that what Jesus was referring to? Maybe it could be our great programs or ministries or the great coffee that we serve, or even by our words or efforts. Was that what Jesus was referring to? Will that help the world know? It might help, but it's not what Jesus was referring to. "By this, everyone will know you are my disciples if you love one another." It seems that how the world will know that we are Jesus' disciples is not so much by the words that we say and the things that we do and the strategies we have, but actually by our love for one another. Not even our love for the world out there, as important as that is, but our love for each other in here. Tim Keller writes, "The community is one of the main ways we do outreach, discipleship, and experience communion with God." And he says the real secret of fruitful and effective mission in the world is the quality of our community. I wonder if you've ever thought about how we love and serve one another, how we treat one another is actually to be an evangelism strategy to our community and the world. Our love for one another in here can be and should be a witness to the world out here, out there. You know, sometimes I look around church, if I'm honest, on Sundays, and I smile to myself, of course. But sometimes I look around and smile, and one of the reasons I smile is because I think to myself, now please hear me on this, okay? But I think to myself, you know what?
it's not natural that we would be friends. I look around and I think, and I invite you to do that this morning. I look around and I think, you know what? It's not natural that we would all be in the same place, that we would even be friends. You see, we come from different backgrounds and are different ages. We have different interests. Some of you like don't like sport, and I don't know how to relate to you. But we have different interests, and we have different incomes. We have different preferences, and we even have different politics. And that's okay. That's okay. You see, because Jesus didn't call us to be like one another. He called us to love one another. And so we may not be uniform in the church, and certainly not in this church. We may not be uniform, but we can be and are called to be unified. You see, in the last few years, we've multiplied our worship services. We meet at different times on a Sunday. We even meet at different places, in Belfast each week and in Ballydough once a month. We don't always meet in the same place, but we still remain united together with the same heart. You see, when we fall out over secondary issues, it damages unity. Ministry should seek unity. You see, it's okay to disagree on preferences, on what you and I prefer. That's okay. But actually, we are to be united in the primary things. We will not have everything in common, but who we have in common is everything. Because our common bond is Jesus. And he is greater than anything that might divide us. You know, if we think that we are the only people in this church, if I think or you think that we're the only people in this church to have it sorted out, or you're part of the only ministry or organization and you're the only ones to get it right, then we will or it will damage unity. Because arrogance destroys unity. You know, it's not that you or I have it right and everyone else has it wrong. It's that we each have a particular part to play in displaying Jesus to the world around us. Christian unity doesn't lie in one set of ideas or one form of worship. It's in one name and one name alone. And it's Jesus that connects us together. He makes us family. He calls us to be one. The ground is level at the foot of the cross. And that's where we all stand this morning. And it brings us into unity with one another. Matt Chandler writes that what connects believers together is the reality that we were all very messed up people, broken before a holy God, yet rescued and given new life in Christ. So we do have something in common this morning. And it's our status before Jesus. We're all broken at his feet. We are united because we all need him. And so no one here is greater than another. No one's work more important or less important. The ground is level at the foot of the cross. So let's strive for unity. And that involves all of us. It doesn't just involve the people who stand at the front or people who take a lead. It involves us all, our attitudes and our actions. Ministry needs unity. And as we step into a fresh process of defining a vision and a strategy, we do so seeking to be united together in it. So it needs unity, but also it seeks direction. You see, Peter wanted direction from Jesus. He said to him, in fact, he asked him a question. He said, Lord, where are you going? Because Peter wanted to know where Jesus was going to be so that he could be with him in it. You see, Peter thought that it was about the location that he would be in. But Jesus turned his thoughts and he helped Peter to see that it wasn't so much about his location, but it was more about his direction. Where are you going? Peter, Jesus replied, where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. You see, Jesus was making it clear to Peter that while he couldn't be with him in the same place now, that the direction of his life would mean that he would one day go there later. And he was actually prophesying about his death and the way they would both die. You see, Jesus was telling Peter that right then it wasn't about his location. It was about his direction. And our direction should be to follow in the way of Jesus. personally, but I think it's the same for us as a church too, isn't it? You know, sometimes we can get so bound up with where we are going or where we will be. You know, even in discerning God's will at times in our lives, we think about what job we should do or where we should be. And, you know, I'm not so sure, actually. It's always about the specific place we find ourselves in. And I think it's far more about who we will be where we are there. About not the location of our lives, but the direction of our lives. You see, we can get so bound up in where we're going that we miss who we're becoming. So this process actually is not simply about us working out where we are going as a church. Of course, it will involve us thinking about what we do in the future and what we prioritize. But the bigger question is, who are we going to be? Who are we being as a church? And who are we now? And who should we become? You see, even when Peter was totally unsure about where he was going and even where Jesus was going, Jesus uses the same word twice in the very next sentence. And it's a really simple word. And the word is follow. That's what Jesus invited Peter to do. He invited him to follow. You see, the route might have been unclear for Peter, but his direction was clear, and it was to follow Jesus. The main goal that Peter had was to be near and get near Jesus and to follow him. Over the Christmas holidays, myself and a few friends decided that we would go to an Ulster rugby match one Friday evening. It doesn't sound abnormal in any way. It sounds pretty normal. The only difference was that this rugby match, the Ulster rugby match, was not in Belfast, but it was in Galway, 4 hours' drive away. It's even more abnormal because I've attended one Ulster rugby match this year, and none of them were in Belfast. It was in Galway. And so we decided to do a road trip and go down for the day. Some people ask me, why on earth would you spend 8 hours in the car to watch an 80-minute rugby match? I think it's a fair question, to be honest. And none of us are huge Ulster rugby fans, but we decided to go, and the answer to the question of why was really simple. Because I really liked the people that we were going with. I really liked them. And so they're friends of mine, so we wanted to hang out for a day and spend time together, and this is the way we chose to do it. To be honest, the match was terrible. Ulster were awful. They got absolutely demolished. And Galway was, it was okay. Yeah, it was nice. But to be honest, the highlight of the day for me was the 8 hours that we spent in the car. Because we had a great time together. We were catching up with one another, our friends. We don't see each other as regularly as we might. And we were catching up with one another and enjoying kind of chat and banter and crack together. And it was great. You see, where we were going was much less important to me than who we were with. Corrie ten Boom, a Dutch missionary to the Jews, who my son heard about in an assembly recently and called Molly Tin Bin, but it's definitely called Corrie ten Boom. And she said this: when a train goes through a tunnel and it gets dark, you don't throw away the ticket and jump off. You sit still and trust the engineer. If I'm really honest this morning, I don't really know where we're going. I don't know, because we are trying to follow Jesus and discern his will and his vision for us as a church. So I'm certainly not standing up here and saying, this is what we should do. This is where we should go. Hopefully, we will get there over the next few months and year. We will get there. But in the meantime, what we're going to do is we're going to sit still and we're going to trust the engineer. You see, we don't need a better version of church. We need a bigger vision of Jesus. And as we see that bigger vision of Jesus in our lives, I think it will help us to get a bigger vision and a better vision for us as a church. And so as leaders in this church, we are seeking direction. That's what we're asking for. The route's unclear and the future's unknown, but we want to seek the direction God wants for us as a church. We trust him and we follow him. And so will you pray for this process? We're inviting you into that this morning as well. Will you pray for this as a process as we seek direction together for this as a church? So we need unity and we seek direction, but also ministry will involve sacrifice. Jesus asked this to Peter. He said, will you really lay down your life for me? You see, Jesus challenged his followers that life in his kingdom would at times require sacrifice. It would require them to lay down their lives. And of course, there would be blessing and joy and life to the fullness and hope eternal for following Jesus, but it would also mean laying down their lives and even sacrificing their life, especially for Peter. See, I think following Jesus involves us giving up our preferences at times to pursue his purposes. To give up our preferences to pursue his purposes. And that's a challenge for us, isn't it? As individuals, it's a challenge for us to lay down what we want. You know, with all things that we enjoy doing, with all ways that we like doing things, with maybe even songs that we like singing, and people that we prefer being with. And none of those things are bad in and of themselves, unless, of course, we get so caught up in those things that they become the goals that we cling to, and even the gods that we cling to. When the methods go before the mission, when the vehicles go before the vision, when our preferences get in the way of his purposes. And I wonder if Jesus asks us the same question this morning. Will you lay down your life? Will you lay it down for me? Will you lay down what you like and what you want for me? Will I lay down what I want in order to make way for what he wants? Will you do that too? As we step out in this process of discerning a vision, a way forward, a strategy, a plan for the next phase of the life of this church, we want to do so with a willingness to surrender and sacrifice our own desires while searching for and listening to the heart of God for this church family. Because there's a generation to disciple. There's a people to pastor. There's a community to reach. There's a God to seek. And there's a kingdom to come. And it will involve us all. All of us. No matter whether you've been part of this church all your life or you've just arrived, no matter whether you're in leadership or not, it will involve us all. Last summer, a letter came through our front door one evening, inviting us to gather in our community in a few days' time or in a week's time for a big community cleanup. So the grass areas of our development had become a little bit overgrown, and there was weeds and nettles and all sorts of things. And so somebody took leadership and said, picking a date, and we're inviting everyone to kind of come and get mucked in with the process. And so a few nights later, I found myself wheeling my tiny little lawnmower to the large grass section in our area, and what a scene met my eyes. At least a dozen lawnmowers were in action, each tending to a specific strip. And there were families on their hands and knees weeding flower beds together. And there was old men with hedge clippers. And there was people with petrol-powered strimmers. And there was parents that were offering refreshments. And there was children running along and playing together. And it was beautiful. What a scene met my eyes. And I wheeled my lawnmower and reported to the person who was leading. You know, I reported on duty, and I said, what would you like me to do? And he gave me the tiniest little bit of grass, less than the size